From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, Ben Brown will be here from FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy and Research Institute at the University of Missouri. We'll take up free trade and how the wheat ban coincides with some things that have been happening with COVID and what that really means across the planet. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. To that with Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn settled $8.09 today, up 28.25. The September at 7.78, 20.5 higher. In December futures, that's the new crop, up 16.75 at $7.65.5. July beans up a dime at $16.56.5. And new crop November at $15.12, up 13.75. Bean meal $4.30 higher. And the bean oil for the day, down 80 cents. Wheat futures were locked up the limit. July in the soft red at 12.47.5, up 70. And the hard red July 70 higher at $13.52 for the day. Live cattle futures at $133.90, $1.55 higher. Feeders were 60 lower, 60 cents that is, at $167.42.5. And lean hogs at $103.82.5, $3.07.5 higher. Crude oil at $114.50 a barrel, up $4 and a penny. The diesel fuel or heating oil, 3.3 cents higher, $3.79.5 per gallon. And gasoline up 8.9 cents of a cent at $4.48 of a cent for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 32,333. That's about 213 points higher. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace. The ban on wheat exports from India pushed wheat futures higher. What happened in the rest of the complex today, and what are your expectations, Kurt?
Oh, yeah, that was front and center. It's giddy up and go from the start last night in the wheat complex. India is projected to export about 8.5 million metric tons of wheat. They've shipped out about 2.5 of that, but it sounds like anything that's already been sold is not going to be moved out at all. In fact, there's talk that India might import 2.5 million metric tons of wheat to, you know, keep some supplies around. You know, food security around the world, you know, continues to be the main theme, with India stepping up and seeing that, and some other countries. Here in the U.S., we'll see how the crop conditions report shows on it, but definitely wheat was front and center. That kind of pulled the rest of the complex higher because the wheat traded and limit up most of the day. Synthetics and the options, I saw anywhere from just a 5.5 to 6 cents higher to 15 cents higher looking at the synthetics, but there's some fairly huge buy orders limit up, and part of that was probably traders just playing with the market, wanting to make sure it stayed higher on the day. There's just not a whole lot for sale. Who wants to stand in front of a freight train in through here? But long story short, that kind of spilled over into the other commodities. We saw basically old corn kind of pick up the momentum here. When you look around at some of these bids are fairly aggressive, 50 cents over. Some situations where they're trying to buy some old corn. Part of that, too, is guys just got their hands in their pocket wanting to get the crop in the field, but Brazilian corn futures were sharply higher this morning. I keep forgetting about that South America. That kind of news item's kind of the back burner, so there's ideas that safrinha crop could be, downgraded a little bit more here over time. So just a lot of bullish enthusiasm starting out the weekend through here. We'll see if it follows through. If we get a turnaround Tuesday, we're going to blame it on Wayne.
So I do have some questions about today's USDA NAS report. The expectations, I think, have been pretty good size for how many acres producers were expected to plant for the week. What are those numbers, and do you agree with them at the moment?
Well, what I've been seen and heard, you know, a lot of areas. Well, not a lot, but quite a few areas. I mean, you're looking at 100% done, complete. This report's probably going to lag. As a nation, we're seeing the estimates of 43 to 58% complete on corn. The average estimate's 49% versus 22% last week. Soybeans got a range of 25 to 36. The average guess there is about 29% complete. That's 12% last week. The Northwest is still struggling. The Southeast still hit and miss. I think progress is much higher than that, but it's going to take a few reports to get caught up. And on the wheat conditions report, good to excellent category is 30% good to excellent versus 29%. That's last week there, Todd.
Butter producers calling and asking you about that this time. We've got prices very high for old crop and really quite high for new crop at this point, but we're very early in the season.
Yeah, a lot of it's mainly this conversation here. You know, as far as marketing, most have their hands in their pockets in through here, wanting to get the crop in the ground. The main theme, you know, is what we've been hearing or seeing around the countryside, see how far along everybody is on their progress. It's just we're caught in a kind of a vacuum in through here. And when you look at the big picture and step back, a lot of analysts are just plain telling you we can rally corn a dollar or two, or corn can break a dollar or two, just extreme high volatility. Here last week and even today, we had a few more producers come in and we've established some price floors with the idea we don't want to take a couple steps backwards in through here. By establishing some price floors, it leaves your upside open. It's pretty pricey. You got to stay on top of it and manage it. But that's about the only way you can lock something in and still have your upside open there, Todd.
I took a look at your favorite forecaster to see what they said about the end of the month of the May. And for Illinois to the east, they say, well, there could be from the 24th to the 31st some scattered thunderstorms, and it will turn cooler. That doesn't sound like such bad weather for good corn growing conditions to me. Have you been paying attention to it?
Yeah, I'm glad you got updated there. And the theme as you move on out in through summer and so forth, there's quite a few chances of some moisture across the Midwest in through there. Temperature's going to fluctuate up and down in through here, but there's really not a sign of it really extreme dryness. In fact, extreme dryness would be welcomed in some areas in through here as we try to get the crop in and get it up.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
You bet. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. You can always find and listen to it online. There are a couple of ways to do that, willag.org. You can just click and play from the website or hit the podcast link, and you'll find podcast applications there in the players, places like Spotify and Google Play, Apple Podcast, along with Amazon Music. If you're an Audible user, you can just search it out there. If you're at home and you use Google or you use Alexa, either one, you can just ask for our programs. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Ben Brown. He's at FAPRI, that's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. He's also with Missouri University Extension. Thank you for being with us, Ben. I want to take up something that's sort of related, but to put it in context of free trade. India, over the weekend, banned exports of wheat out of that country because they have a relatively poor crop. We also have been suffering through COVID and input prices and inflation, and I want to talk about it all as it relates to free trade. Can you put some context around all of those things for me?
Well, how much time do we have, Todd? No, I'm just kidding. No, it's great to be with you again, as always. You bring up a really great question, and something that I think we as an ag economics profession spend a lot of time thinking about, and at least I think about how to present this to the general public, okay? I think most people in agriculture recognize, or at least U.S. agriculture, recognize the benefits of trade. And we talk as an economics profession about how trade in general, no matter what commodity, what product, the society as a whole is made better off by trade. What we have not done as a profession, in my opinion, again, this has been Brown's opinion, not the University of Missouri, not anything in behalf of other ag economists. We have not done a good job of talking about who potentially loses as a result of trade and the time and the transition that it takes, that if you start, you know, removing restrictions, certainly places that are, and I'm going to use the United States, a lot of our manufacturing has left the United States. And as a result, we haven't done a good job of explaining, you know, the transition for manufacturing, right? Like that's the thing. We talk all about the benefits of trade and we don't talk about the downside. So we need to do a better job as a profession, in my opinion, doing that. Specifically to India and wheat. This is just the latest in terms of a global protectionist movement, if you will, in terms of restricting exports of product to protect domestic consumers. Now, this is not a policy that the United States has ever really taken up. We've come close a couple times and we've had some fringe policies here and there that are protectionist in nature towards food. But our policy here in the United States for generations has been that our product is allowed to flow to whoever has the highest dollar or the most money to spend. And if that's the export market, our consumers here in the United States have to compete against that export market to retain product within the country. Other countries do not have that policy. A couple weeks ago, it was Indonesia with their restriction of palm oil. And given the importance of palm oil to the global vegetable oil market, that certainly sent vegetable oil prices up and continue to remain high. We look at India and wheat. So India is a top 10 exporter of wheat in terms of producer as well. They suffering from a short crop, seeing prices increase, but then just also feed grain prices globally as a result of this Ukraine crisis going up and the concern for their domestic consumers, putting an export limitation on wheat. So it'll send prices down internally within their country. We would expect, and we are seeing it today in terms of a drastic increase in the global wheat market. The question I have, and I don't have an answer, Todd, I can't answer this, but when I speak to outlook groups right now is how far does this go? How many more countries continue, you know, add export restrictions as a result of India sending the price higher? That's going to cause some of these other countries to even question, hey, do we need to put a protectionist policy in place? I don't think we're going to get to that point in the United States, but those are the famous last words, right? Like, we certainly have an interest in protecting consumers here in the United States as well. And so at a certain point, there is a price for all of this to where we'd expect that to become a consideration. But I just don't think we're there yet.
And of the grains and the oil seeds, wheat is particularly of interest across the planet. It's grown just about every month, planted, that is, and harvested just about every month of the year. But it is the one that is closest to the consumer because it turns into bread and cakes and crackers and such.
Yep, so staple foods. Yeah. Yep, staple foods.
So it is a very interesting one to ban because it is directly related to food. And then, of course, there are all kinds of problems that can come when people can't get food. They get kind of mad about it. So,
yeah, and you have social unrest in countries that spend a high amount of their income on food, right? So that's why we've been concerned about North Africa and some of those countries that depend on imports from Ukraine or imports from India. The thing also I want to add, there is this tracker of global calories, share of global calories being restricted by export bans, export taxes, stuff like that. And adding in the wheat ban this weekend, that now takes us as a share of global calories above the food price crisis in 2008. So a notable break, a point that we've now exceeded, and we're now above the global food crisis back in 2008.
So why is it that the offset with free trade, and maybe I'll come back to the beginning of the conversation of being able to move things into the country, but potentially not making them in the country, it has been acceptable. And could you put that in context of where we were prior to COVID and where we are now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the short answer to your question is, why do we feel like society as a whole is better off with trade? And the notion there is competitive advantage, right? Everybody has a competitive advantage in terms of what they're able to produce. Maybe that's geographical in terms of nature. So just the climate to produce crops, right? We don't produce a lot of corn in Nevada, for instance, even though there are places that have irrigated corn in Nevada. You know, we predominantly produce it here in the Midwest because we have the climate and we have the soil to support that. Same thing globally, right? Like, we're not going to have a huge palm oil here in the United States, so we depend on countries to provide us with that. So there is a competitive advantage, point here to be made. The question that I think you are asking is, have we turned the corner and moving away from that global market of competitiveness? And I certainly think that this has been, you know, something that has really picked up over the last decade of countries saying we want to move production of goods closer to our own countries. This nationalist, this protectionist policy for nations. And I'm not blaming this on any one thing or incident or, you know, anything. I think it's just a way we've been moved, largely because we did not do a good job explaining who loses as a result of free trade. And that contingency of people has continued to grow, and their, you know, their discomfort and their agitation with it has continued to grow to now where it's festering. It was happening before COVID, but then certainly COVID created the food price aspect of this in terms of, prices are rising at the grocery store. Who's to blame for this? And we've looked for people to blame. And we're seeing that some now in vegetable oils and grains, just a growing, you know, agitation with who's to blame for this. So.
Just one other thing to add. The European Union tackled this in a unique way because of the nations it, and here in the United States, relatively speaking as well, if you just put them down each as whole worlds, but allowed people to cross the borders no matter which state or nation they lived in order to create the labor markets that would be acceptable in other places. And the one thing that has been restricted across the planet is labor movement as opposed to goods movement. So free trade without the ability to move labor easily can cause problems.
Absolutely. I talk about this all the time. If you want to talk about beef, cattle are not the only input into beef. Labor is an input into beef production as well, amongst other things, right? So while we have raw goods that we think of like corn, soybeans, wheat, cattle, or, beef, whatever, labor is also a commodity in itself, right? And so there is benefit in being able to trade that. There's also downsides. I don't want to just say that that's free and open, but there are downsides. And during COVID, we saw the restriction due to trying to control the disease and not allowing the disease to be moved as people moved across the world. So certainly that hindered that input as well.
We would need far more than 10 minutes, probably far more than 10 hours to discuss this in great depth. But thank you for taking
a
little
time.
Thank
you, Todd. Appreciate it.
That's Ben Brown. He is an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri. On this Monday, let's check the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Thanks, Mark, for being with us. A lot to cover today. Begin in the northern plains, North Dakota, Minnesota, down into Iowa, or at least the northwestern corner of Iowa. What conditions have been like over the past week for them? What your expectations might be over the next 2 weeks? Because they'll have to really start to move to catch up.
Yeah, Todd. Looking at the northwestern corn belt and then also for the spring wheat areas there and portions of the western Dakotas, last week saw much warmer temperatures, but also saw some additional precipitation across that region. And so one area that did kind of miss out with the heavier rains was southern Minnesota, but that was not the case further west in areas of the Dakotas. As we look ahead here for this week, it looks like there will continue to be some activity from now through Thursday and Friday. After that, does look to present a break in the action across the Dakotas and Minnesota. However, that drier stretch does look to be accompanied by much cooler temperatures as well. fact, it's not out of the question. A few areas could drop to close to freezing across areas of the far northwestern Corn Belt coming up over the weekend and the early part of next week. Readings then look to warm up after that, but still some additional precipitation. So all in all, it's really the northwestern Corn Belt kind of centered in the Dakotas and Minnesota just continues to be the areas with the most difficulties from now through the end of the month.
For the rest of the Corn Belt, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Ohio, parts of Michigan and Wisconsin. Are there different scenarios?
Yeah, the further east you go, the more active conditions will be. But it doesn't look exceptionally wet or where things really would be totally bogged down or halted for any extended period of time. So yeah, it looks okay. Not totally open, but not totally bogged down either. But Eastern Belt will likely make a little less progress here versus the Western Belt coming up, since the east is where there will be a bit more activity.
Switch your attention to Europe now. France and Germany have a wheat crop in the ground. People are really worried about that given the condition of wheat across the northern hemisphere at this time.
Yeah, our concern right now is primarily for the France crop because it's been the driest the longest. And not only has it been drier than normal the past 30 days, but even the past 60 days across the main winter wheat acreage. Germany has fared better. They've gotten more rain, especially prior to the past 3 to 4 weeks. So they're in better shape compared to France. Looking ahead now, the next 10 days does offer some relief for France as a series of systems will be crossing Western Europe and providing some light to moderate rains. However, it does look like beyond 10 days, the pattern will return to a dry one across the region. And so, again, it's not out of the question with this current dryness happening now that there's likely, you know, taking at least some yield potential from the France crop. Again, it could be worse if they didn't get these rains the next 10 days. That is still that's the main area of concern right now in Europe.
Let's stay in the northern hemisphere, but deal with a crop that's already been harvested in India. That nation, of course, banning exports over the weekend. Can you give me some perspective of how that crop fared as it came through its growing season?
Yeah, overall, the India winter wheat crop had very good conditions up until March. And as more of the crop was going through the yield-sensitive heading stage, especially up north, that was the timing of that development did coincide with extreme heat. And so there was likely, you know, yield reduction there to the portion of the crop that was going through the yield-sensitive heading stage, which primarily, by our analysis, was more so in the states of Punjab and Haryana there in far northern India. So that's why, so as a result of that, yeah, likely some lower production and now just, you know, harvesting of the crops and now actually starting to look ahead towards the start of the summer monsoon rainy season for summer crops.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.